I know you're familiar with, as most well-read people are, Dr. Charles Murray. Okay, so Dr. Murray last Thursday goes to Middlebury College in Vermont. And this is an event that was instigated, we find out, by a group of students at Middlebury College called the American Enterprise Institute Club. They're the ones that got one of their professors to invite Dr. Murray to go give the speech. I'm not going to get into all the details here, but we know what happened, and I talked about it all day yesterday, or for 2 hours here on the show, that this is a moment of consequence here. People tend to poo-poo these things and say, well, that's just a bunch of weirdos at Middlebury or a bunch of wackos at Berserkly or a bunch of loons at what insert college here. There is a pattern that is emerging here. And the pattern is emerging here has a consistency to it. Anytime there is a consistency, that to me suggests strategy and planning. So my take on this, and I want to get your expert take on this, is that, look, all of these protests and all this violence and insanity and this unwillingness to have any intercourse whatsoever with people because you disagree with them, especially if you say that you're good or then they're evil, or you say that you're evil and they're good, this is part of the weapons system that is the cult of death. It just dawned on me yesterday after reading James Burnham that the cult of death, Dr. Pierce, Colonel Pierce, is a weapons system. And what we're seeing today is the logical end result of now an entire generation living their entire adult from cradle to young adulthood steeped in the cult of death. That the weapon system has weaponized these kids. This is what we're, that's the reality. That's baked in now. That's the reality of what the future holds. What do you say?
Well, basically, it's a consequence, an inevitable consequence of relativism. Because, you know, if you don't believe in an objective truth, what's the point of discussing it, right? Basically, it's all about power. It's all about, you know, this is what I feel. It's all about what I'm feeling, what my friends feel, and we're going to basically destroy anybody that gets in our way. And you can't say, well, let's just talk about this. You know, what you feel, is it actually in accordance with what's good for you, what's going to make you happy, or what's going to make the rest of society happy, or is it actually destructive, self-destructive and destructive on a wider sociological level?
Sure.
There's no point talking about that because they don't believe in truth, right? Basically, get out of our way or we'll crack your skull. And the other thing you need to realize here is this is nothing new, right? Secularism, for all of its lies about religion causing wars, has basically got more blood in its hands in the last century than any centuries before it, regardless of whatever religion was in the ascendant at the time. So in other words, we've seen the French Revolution, we've seen the Russian Revolution, we've seen the Nazi Revolution, we've seen the Fascist Revolution, we've seen China. And basically, wherever God is removed from the picture, we end up cutting each other's throats.
And it continues to happen. And this is what the cult of death has sown here, especially in most of Europe, and certainly in the United States, and unfortunately in other places as well. And that is that life is, because we're going to find life on other planets, and we're going to prove someday that there is no God. So there is no God. There's no sense wasting your time looking for him.
Right.
No,
but again, you know, none of these people addressed the arguments for the existence of God. None of them actually addressed the philosophical arguments, the scientific arguments, the historical arguments, the theological arguments, all the various rational discussions that we could and should be having a good, healthy discourse upon the fundamental things of life, one of which, of course, in fact, the most fundamental thing of life, does God exist? Because so many things follow on from that. But there is no rational discourse on it now. It's basically violence and dogma. And it's ironic that they accuse Christians and religious people of being dogmatic, but relativistic dogmatism is the deadliest of all.
And now, when you say relativistic dogmatism, so this is a deeply held belief that these people think that they must, in some sort of way, honor but has no basis in the Christian world or any.
Well, basically, what you do, you say, you know, the relativist creed, the first line, which is basically the only one, you know, that I believe there's no absolute truth, and after that, that's a faith, that's a statement of faith. After that, everything else follows. So there's no absolute truth, therefore there's no God. Now, there's no need to argue the fact. There's no need to discuss the fact. No need to look at the evidence. It's a statement of blind faith. Right, and so these people hold dogmatic beliefs that they're prepared to kill for, without ever actually bothering to test them against reality.
And the test against reality would yield the result. Like, for example, St. Thomas Aquinas says or wrote that he could prove the existence of God from a piece of straw. Now, how many people are actually willing to sit down and read? Because and Aquinas does do it. He walks you through the steps.
Right.
He'll walk you through the steps of how a piece of straw proves the existence of God. But how many school children, other than the Pierce children and the Simpson children, how many school children today will ever even be told that in the 12th and the 13th century, a monk, Thomas of Aquinas, actually prove the existence of God by the existence of a piece of straw? This predates computers. This predates all manner of mathematical calculation and formula. But all it took was a simple, beautiful little piece of straw.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's the whole point. It's reason. It's reason. And reason requires an engagement with objective reality. And objective reality is something that's outside your own ego. Right, whereas relativism and narcissism basically centers reality in your ego. It's about me and my feelings and how I self-identify. The God I make of myself and the cosmos I make of myself is all that matters. And so there's no need to test my beliefs with anything outside of myself. And so what we have is this basically atomized, isolated, very lonely, ultimately very despairing culture. And this is the one thing we need to, you know, always bear in mind, that the culture of death is not sustainable. It's deadly, but ultimately it's suicidal, right? So it's actually killing itself. So yeah, you mentioned the Simpson children and the Pierce children, and I spend most of my life traveling around talking to Catholic families. There's a great deal of really good renewal out there, a renaissance going on, and these people understand reality. They're probably going to have relationships. They're probably going to have kids, right? The culture of death is ultimately in the process of ripping itself apart. Now, of course, it's going to try to rip us apart at the same time, but only when it's not too busy ripping itself apart, which is what's going to basically be what it's doing most of the time.
Earlier, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of James Burnham.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So this was just revealed to me yesterday, and was revealed at Catholicism.org, Brother Andre Marie's website, and it was in an essay that is that comes from, and I'm going through my stack of Dr. Robert Hickson. And he writes about a managed conflict apparatus and the legacy of Louis-Auguste Blanqui, another guy that I'd never heard of. So I'm reading Professor Burnham here, and it's dawning on me as I'm reading this, as all truth does, that, okay, reason tells me that makes sense. Reason tells me that actually is true. I can test this against the real world, and I can see what Burnham was writing about and what he had identified. Now, he was talking about Soviet, communist, socialist, fascist infiltrators. What we're talking about, who are doing the exact same thing today, are about these cult of death, homosexual, transgender, pro-choice, or pro-death infiltrators. There now, it may be said that the communist infiltrators ultimately, that their ultimate goal was, I think, the destruction and the end of the Roman Catholic Church. Today, though, we should be able to with certainty say, we know what the attack upon the family, upon marriage, upon children, upon all these things, ultimately that is an attack upon the Holy Roman Catholic Church and the Christian faith itself. That's what they're after. What do you say?
Well, Well, let's face it, right? The reality is that the only force that's been around for 2,000 years that has stood against the culture of death has been the Catholic Church. It is the enemy of the darkness. And so, you know, the radical relativists today know that if they can destroy the Catholic Church, then basically the resistance to their agenda will be removed. We are the resistance to their agenda. And we've been the resistance to their agenda for 2,000 years.
Right.
G.K. Chesterton said that the Catholic Church is the one continuous institution that's been thinking about thinking for 2,000 years. But it's also been fighting the dragon for 2,000 years, you know. So it is the church militant. That's what we are, the church on earth, as opposed to the church in heaven or purgatory. It's the church militant. It's the church at war. We are meant to be miles Christi, soldiers for Christ. That's exactly, they know who the enemy are. The agents of darkness know where the light is, and they want to snuff it out. But thankfully, we know that the gates of hell won't prevail. They haven't done, and there have been many times in history where it looks as if the Catholic Church is finished. You know, the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, French Revolution, Protestant Reformation. There have been many, many times when it looks like the Catholic Church is finished, and like its master, it always has this knack of rising from the dead.
It does have its knack of rising from the dead. all right, before you have to go, Saturday, just a few days, we are going to gather together in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, at Chesterton Square, and are going to, I think this is the third annual Baton Rouge Chesterton Society's annual Chesterton event. You're going to be speaking. Are you going to be rambling and ad-libbing, or are you, do you have a subject that they gave you?
Well, you know, I like rambling and ad-libbing.
I like it, too. That wasn't a knock.
Now, basically, what I normally do, I have some bullet point notes to make sure that I'm going in the right direction, but I don't read a talk or anything. I speak on the topic, and I've written basically one page of bullet points, so I know I've got to move from this idea to that idea to that idea to that idea till I get to the end. That's the way I personally give talks. I think that I find that much more engaging for the audience and for my own mind. It forces me to think on my feet than if I'm just reading something I've written.
Are you going to tell the story about how, and David Simpson told this to me, and I think you and he may have discussed it when you were on his show last, and that was somebody asked Chesterton, G.K. Chesterton, a question about some article of science. It might have been photosynthesis or something like that. And Chesterton's response was just so Chestertonian that it just begs to be repeated over and over and over again. And his response was, why do I have to know what photosynthesis is that makes the grass green? Why can't I just continue operating with my belief that when the sun goes down and it gets really dark, there's a bunch of fairies that come out and paint the blades of grass green?
Well, I mean, that got what it was intended to get, which is a laugh. I mean, Chesterton's a great humorist. Of course, you know, we do need to insist, because Chesterton insisted, because he was a Thomist, and Sir Thomas Aquinas insisted, that there's an inextricable connection between faith and reason. And the way that God paints the grass green, the point is we should be able to see photosynthesis as something elven, as something that has the magic of the elves about it. How does nothing become something that paints things green through a process which science has labeled, and the label is not important, photosynthesis, right? That basically, there's a miraculous thing that happens because no one knows how it came into being, right? We know what it does, but we don't know how it came into being.
Right.
So basically, there's this magic that goes on where God paints the grass and the trees green, and the method by which he does it, scientists have labeled photosynthesis, right? But that's the paintbrush, but it's still, we still have the artist up there